Chapter 5, if you will, do that. Also, in prayer for the, there's a up at Ponderosa finishing up the conference up there. I've been having a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Pastor Danny Bond from down in Southern California has been up ministering. He spoke Friday night, then yesterday morning, then last night. I had to leave about 6 to come home to study for today, but the, why don't you stand? I got a call about 10 o'clock from SFO, from Danny, and he missed his plane. And he was there in time. He just left a key back and needed the key to get to his car to fly, to get home, but then found out afterwards there were no more planes coming home to get him to speak. So Dino jumped in the van, drove up, picked him up there, and drove all night getting him down to Southern California. So this should be a wonderful sermon for them down there if he wakes up for it. But anyway, it's also great to have Roby with us, and also he'll be with us tonight. Have a great time with him. And I walked by, Roby looked at me and he said, "Boy, you look nice." I said, "Roby, it's called a bath. It's a California thing that we do here." But anyway. Mark chapter 5, if we can turn there, I think I said that. Mark chapter 5, beginning at verse 25. "And a certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, 'If I may touch his clothes, I shall be whole.' And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out from him, turned him about in the press, and he said, 'Who touched my clothes?' And his disciples said unto him, 'Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me?' And he looked around about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, 'Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague.'" Father, how we thank you for your word. And Lord, we ask that today that you would minister to us as, Lord, you love to minister to this woman. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. As you are, also, I'd like to maybe get a word to Danny and as well to Roby. I'd like to close with Roby's song that he sang on, "We Shall See His Face and Touch Him," and this morning with that. But this morning, as we look at this wonderful little story, of course, the Gospels are filled with tremendous stories and tremendous experiences where Jesus ministered day in and day out, innumerable times, to people that had tremendous trials. And all of them were tremendous. I'm sure each person that asked their testimony on how difficult and how terrible their trial was, they would think it was maybe one of the greatest. He ministered to people all the time with great trials in their health, great trials in their lives brought about perhaps by sin, great trials oftentimes by evil spirits and demonic possessions. There were trials in people's lives over their family, over their food, over living conditions. Trials because people lived in the wrong world, following the wrong things, living for the wrong kingdom. And of course, every story, I suppose, they're all tragic in themselves. They're all very sorrowful, else Jesus wouldn't have been needed. But this today, to me, for some reason, is one of the most pitiful of all of the stories when I think of this poor woman and the struggle that she had for these 12 years with this issue of blood. First of all, a little bit about her history. It tells us there in verse 25, "And a certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing better, but rather grew worse." Here this woman, she had as we are told here, an issue of blood, something that Moses tells us back in the law in the book of Leviticus about a woman in a condition like this. It says in Leviticus 15:19 that whoever touches her will be unclean until the evening. The entire day they were unclean. It goes on in the scriptures there in Leviticus 15 to explain on how that everything that she lieth upon, everything that she sat upon, everything that she touched, if anybody else touched it, they were unclean. They had to actually now go and wash themselves, wash their clothes, and even after they had done that, they were still unclean for the entire rest of the day until the evening. Their day was ruined. Their day was essentially over. They were now to be as unclean as the woman. Just as she was not to be around touching any people, now they couldn't go out and enjoy other people just because they had been with her. Any form of physical contact thus for this woman for some 12 years in any manner, way, shape, or form had been restricted. What a condition. Couldn't go to the temple, of course. Couldn't go into worship. There she was restricted from there as well. And there was something that for the Jews, they looked at this particular sort of an illness, at this physical problem, and they categorized it very much like leprosy was with them. It was not only a physical thing. To them, it was also a spiritual thing. It was an unclean thing. God is judging you because there is something unclean about your life. God has deliberately allowed something to happen in your life that He has deliberately severed you off from all of these other relationships. You are unclean. Your contact with other people will be hurtful to them, and I don't want them around you or you around them. Not until you're clean. And it wasn't that the woman didn't want to be clean. Oh, she desperately wanted to be clean. So much so, it says there that she suffered there many things of many physicians for many years. This woman was willing to put herself through great suffering, through great trials, great difficulties, therefore, for many, many years over this. And there, as she would go down the street, she was an object of pity. A dejected woman, obviously, a desolate woman. A woman there that all the physicians, they could do absolutely nothing for her. What a state to be in. It was painful. It was embarrassing. You've got to carry on. You still got to eat. You still got to do some form of business. You've got to go out in public. You just have to stay away from people. And people have long since known through the years, of course, to say hello to you. They may gesture in some way to you. They may try to converse with you, but there was always the distance, always the awkwardness, always the fact that there was something different about her that kept her at a distance from everyone else. Knowing there people judged her, knowing there that people looked at her wondering, what has she done? What is her sin? Why is it that God seems to have cut her off? And of course, she no doubt wondered about this so commonly. She had long since lived with this, I'm sure, but somehow or another, she carried on. And oh, the disappointments that she had with all the medical trials. And then the poverty that it brought. Because, of course, she'd spent everything, it tells us there. Suffered at the hands, it says, of many physicians. Each time, as she would once again there, you know, decide, well, I've still got to go on. I've got to try again. And then she would go to another doctor. And there, of course, perhaps is typical of the case, anybody that's been to a doctor, and then they sent you in a referral to another, and then to another. You know what it is? You sit down, and you go through the whole story all over again. And then you get another diagnosis, and then you get another opinion, and then you get another process that we're going to try that hasn't really been quite tried. And you say, oh, yes, two doctors ago tried that one. Yes, but they didn't try it in the procedure we're going to try it. We're going to do it in a different order they did it, or something like this. But you try it again, because there just isn't anything else to do. There's no other option seemingly out there. And so then you just sit there and you try to go through it again. Each one promising perhaps to help her condition, to help improvement somehow or another. Changing the medication, doing something here or there, but just receiving another bill until finally she become completely impoverished. Not only financially, I'm sure, spiritually, socially, mentally. What a history. And as it goes on, it wasn't simply to look at her history, but her history therefore obviously produced a helplessness about it, didn't it? For it says there, it says in verse 26 as it ends, had suffered many things of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was nothing bettered, but rather grew
words.
There is something about anything that goes on in our life, have you noticed it, that when it goes on, the longer it goes on, even if it doesn't get worse, it gets worse. If something even has a way of just staying the same, by the mere fact that it does not get better, it has a way of actually getting worse for many people. Something there that goes on initially, you got a problem, but hey, well, initially, okay, it's a problem, but we'll fix it somehow or another, and then you go to somebody that can't fix it. And it stays the same. And then you go someplace else, it stays the same. The next thing you know in your heart, the more options you try, the more processes you go through, the worse it gets, at least in your heart. But it appears here it not only got worse, therefore, within her heart, but also it was physically even getting worse as well. It's not at all difficult to look at this woman and imagine her there in her desolation, there in her loneliness, there in her distance from God and man. Finding herself in this remote world of her own, just sitting, wanting to die. Wonder how many times she contemplated the thought. Religion was no comfort. Doctors were no comfort. Neighbors kept their distance. Life was therefore no doubt rather meaningless to her. But at the same time, there, as she thought about all these things, and then the prognosis never got any better. But rather, things got worse. You wonder if she considered taking her life. You wonder how many times she maybe thought, hey, this is definitely going nowhere. There's no use continuing it on. It's not as if I've got some hope still out there. Wouldn't it just be better to finally just die and to be released from these troubles that I've got, these trials that I've been in? They're endless. But you know, you almost have to wonder how many times she maybe got right close to that, maybe even considered it. Somehow or another, amazingly, God stopped her. She, of course, couldn't see the day coming weeks and months and years off, the day that Jesus would come to town. She knew nothing of him. She knew of no hope at all. There she just found herself there just watching it get worse and worse. She didn't know one day that she would reach out and touch the hem of his garment and be made whole. She didn't know how her life would one day be transformed and she would become a character that would be unbelievable encouragement to literally millions of people that would follow after her in her same condition. The message that she would send out there to others by her faith as it would finally be expressed. But at the time, the depression was so great. The loneliness was so intense. The agony. The scream of silence as it just echoes through your lonely heart. Something there. And when you look at her, perhaps one of the greatest things that happened to her, I suppose, is one day she ran out of doctors and she ran out of money. Maybe for 12 years she still had something out there. She still had some form of a resource. She still had something there, and there was another doctor, there was another promise, and there was another way to raise the money or hold the job or to pay the bill when it would come. And so there she continued to go down that road again and again and again. I wonder how many people live in those same circumstances. I wonder how many even here today. That on one hand, your life is lonely and it's empty and it's depressing. It seems as if everyone stays a certain distance from you. The love, the fellowship, the relationships that you would love, somehow or another, they just have not happened. And if anything, you even think people look at you and don't care much about you. You're unclean in one way or another to people socially. Never seem to have an identity that people would reach out, be a part of you. Oh, they may look at you and converse, but at the same time, there's always the distance and the depression goes on. And you go on too. And one of the reasons you go on is there's still a doctor out there somewhere. There is still some money to be spent. There is still something that keeps you going. You get up, even though in your own room, there you sit there and maybe you stare out the window wondering many times why, and yet somehow or another, well, there's nothing else to do and I've still got a doctor. I've still got some money. And so you get up and you go out. And you spend it. And you spend it. But the result is always the same. You're no different. I wonder how many of us. But the wonderful thing that happened to this woman, as I said, is she ran out. She lost it all. Finally, one day, she was at the bottom of the barrel. There were no more doctors. There were no more diagnoses. There was no more money to pay for it. And now she found herself in a place there where that loneliness and that agony had a way of souring and turning to a desperation unknown to her. But yet somehow or another, you can take a person, amazingly to me, that has loneliness and agony and separation, and then one day, if you add two things to it, it's amazing what can happen. You add desperation. Add desperation to a lot of people's lives. I think so many people, they just seem to live in this little gray area of depression, but it's never a desperate depression. It's never a last resort depression. There's still, we go on. And I wonder how many people live for months, live for years that way, decades that way, as this woman. But finally one day, that depression turned to desperation. And the next thing that happened was, is it was the perfect timing for Jesus to come to town. Two different things happened to her. She finally went over the line. She ran out of her resources, and it was the perfect timing for the great resource to reveal himself, to make known himself to her. But she wasn't ready until she was desperate. For it says there in verse 27, it says that when she had heard of Jesus, she came in the press behind. Here there was something about him that she had heard about Jesus. She had heard about him, and there's a huge crowd is gathered. The press of the people, they're just jammed together, crowded together. Sometimes if you've ever been to a great parade or like the Rose Parade or something, and on how the people, when something comes by, I mean, the people are just jammed in there, shoving and pushed, trying to see. This is the kind of a picture that's going on there. But somehow or another, she found herself in it. She found a way there to continue to work her way through and maybe have people look at her and as she'd continue to maneuver and get her way. But it says there, before she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. This woman did something that was something that of grave danger. What she actually did there, she contemplated that day when she heard that Jesus was down, that it was coming there. No doubt she went out. But then when she got there, she looked and here was a huge crowd. And here was a crowd where now she realized she had to go down and get there in the midst of them if she was going to get near Jesus. And as she was going to get into that, she realized she would have to be, she'd be in the middle of this press. And everybody she passed by and touched her and she touched as they would be pushed from person to person to person, every one of them would be unclean. Every one of them ought to just stop right there, go home, wash their clothes, bathe, and just look at this woman. You ruined my day. What are you doing now? What are you doing here? You see, the very law of God emphasized that anybody in her condition had to stay away from an event like this. You would defile anybody you'd be around. And yet here was something there that this woman, she just knew. And she was so desperate that she was willing to risk it. If she was found there and she was recognized for who she was, the consequences could be terrible. The laws of Moses were very strict. But she probably didn't care if they stoned her. She probably just figured whichever way it goes. If there I deliberately even defile, I do an act that anybody and everybody would interpret. I'm shoving my way right into the midst of this and I am going to get to him one way or another and whoever is in my way. I don't care. Either way, I'm half dead. Either way, finish the job. But she let nothing in her way. She found there, though, she could have had all sorts of excuses. It could have been that she just said, well, I have spent everything. There's no more hope. I've tried every doctor. There's no more hope. Besides, I'm not important enough to ask Jesus for help. And just as she's about to get there, it tells us about a man named Jairus who comes up, a man of great note, an important person. He comes up and talks to Jesus, and Jesus is about to go with him. And now all of a sudden, I can't interrupt that. He's more important than me. So why not give up? You know, it's interesting when you look at this woman's faith as well as she came. On one hand, I'm sure it was feeble. I think that'd be fair. It was weak and timid and even a little bit perhaps superstitious. Something there that if I can touch just the hem of his garment, if I could just go and that's it, just touching. But there was something that she was so desperate that the wonderful thing about it is that she had a realization when she saw Jesus and she heard about him that she realized, I believe that he can do what no doctor has ever done and what no amount of money can ever done has ever done before. And there it would be something that she tried perhaps to sneak her way in. We'll never know all of the things going on within her mind, but it's not hard to figure out some of them. But it tells us there that she came, and there as she just reached out and just the hem of his garment, something there, not even wanting to bother him, not even wanting to look at him, not even wanting to touch him, because therefore, I mean, if he looked at her, who knows what he himself would think. He would know you're unclean. What are you doing here, woman? Not wanting to risk any of that, just knowing that he had a power about himself, she reached out and touched him, and it says, and straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. Here was something that this woman, when she looked, and she got there, she saw something that caused her to know, and her faith was released to say, Lord, you're the answer. And the moment that she knew that, something just began to flood through her body. Something just began to move within her. The plague was dried up. And she was whole. How simple. And there was something that also now really resulted in her unbelievable happiness. It's interesting what happened, though, because Jesus wasn't about to let this thing go. For it says there that in verse 30, it says, and Jesus immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out from him, turned about in the press, and he said, who touched my clothes? His disciples said unto him, thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou who touched me? I mean, Jesus turned and he says, who touched me? Somebody touched me. And the disciples no doubt turned to him and says, I beg your pardon, hello? I mean, here we are going through, you're getting pushed and shoved by everybody in the whole place where the crowd is thronging against us, and you, who touched me? Hello, where, who, what kind of a question was that? And then Jesus, it says there, and he looked about to see her that had done this thing, and the woman fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. Here it was something that tells us there that in Luke's explanation of this thing on how that the power had gone out, it says that virtue had gone out of him. How that there was something that then with this woman, everybody else had been touching, everybody else had been moving, everybody else kind of wanted to be there. But there, as you look at this, you realize that really there was two types of people within this crowd, wasn't there? On one hand, the law, the people, I suppose, that were there had a lot in common. On one hand, they all gave up whatever they were doing that day. All of them were interested in Jesus. All of them thought this might have been the most important thing to do, or they wouldn't have been there. In one sense, they all had that in common. But isn't it amazing on how you have a huge crowd, and they can gather together, and yet in the midst of them, most of them have absolutely nothing happen to them other than maybe intellectually, oh, well, that was interesting. That was what he said was something, you know, to think about. I think I might come back and hear him again when he comes to town. And yet there was also another type of a person within the crowd, and that is somebody who had a desperation, somebody who had a desire, somebody who had a longing in such a way is with all of their heart they wanted to get to him, and they knew that if they did, he would help them. If I can touch him, I know he will turn around and touch me. I know that he will transform me. And you know, I'm convinced that when you and I gather together, it's the same thing. How is it? You know, when we gather here week by week and we come in, what is it? Assumingly, we all got up somehow or another. And assumingly, most of us here were adults and therefore it was your own will. Maybe your wife kicked you out of bed and said, you are going to church or you do not eat lunch and you wanted lunch and this was the way to lunch. I don't know. But I would imagine that with a greater percentage, there was something there. This is important. It's important that we're in church. It's important that we stop in the middle of our day within the busyness and the stuff that goes on. It's important that we stop and get it ourself in a place where Jesus would pass through and hear some of the things that he's got to say. Listen to his word. Focus in a little bit upon him. And yet at the same time, if that's all we're doing, we can come and go as we came. But we can also be people that as we gather together, there can be something within our heart and within our life that reaches out in a desperation and says, if I don't see you, if I don't touch you, my life will not be what it ought to be. My heart will go home as empty as it came. The needs that I have will go on unmet. And the wonderful thing is, I mean, you and I were one of those. I think the Lord, each time we gather together, He has this way of finding out as He passes through, and the throng is pushing up against Him. In the midst, there's the throng, and then there's those who are trusting. And there, as He passes through, the ones of us that go home and something has happened is because something has happened within our life where we say, Lord, I've got to have You work. I've got to have You work. I have got to see You. This woman, when she saw Jesus, she saw what she'd never seen in any doctor. She'd seen what no amount of money could ever buy. She saw within Him the very hope of her life. But how common is it that you, me, how common is it that we find ourselves around Him and yet not desperate, not longing, deeply longing for Him? And the result is we go home the same. It's a common mistake. Abraham did that. Abraham, in a way, he could give up everything and go follow the Lord, go into the land of Canaan. And yet, when he found himself in the land of Canaan and there was a famine in the land, there was a need, did he go and he looked to the Lord and touch His garment? No, he went down to Egypt and he touched an Egyptian garment. I'll touch the hem of that garment. And there, of course, when he touched it, oh, how it stung. And oh, the tragedy that came into his life and his home because he looked to another. It was common. It wasn't children of Israel over and over again. There the Lord even could, you know, free them. Bring them out of Egypt, open the Red Sea, bring them through on dry land. And yet at the same time, when they would get out and Moses would be up on the mountain and they found themselves, we need a work of God. Did they look to God? No. Build us a golden calf, and they found themselves another hem of another garment to touch. How many times is it that you and I, we have needs in our life, and yet we can go and touch another garment, touch another hem? Touch something else that maybe it'll help me. That if I need a new job. That's what I need. I need a new job, and I can get another job, and I don't need to have to put up with this stuff at this job. I need a new house. I need this. We can get up tomorrow morning, we can find ourselves living for something out there to touch its garment. And oh, when I touch it. And yet at the same time, we touch it and touch it and touch it again and again and again, and every time it still lets us down. But somehow or another, we go back to touch it again. Be godly, even David, as wonderful as the man was, but it tells us one time that when David, he was just tired. He was just tired and he didn't want to go to battle. So David tarried still at Jerusalem, trying to gain his own strength. I'm just going to kick back and I'm going to relax. And he went out on his deck one night in his patio there, and he looks down and he sees another, well, wasn't a garment. She didn't have any garments, as a matter of fact. Bathsheba. I'll touch that garment. That'll give me peace. That'll restore me somehow or another. And the next thing you know, you and I, we can look to any other garment. And every time as we touch it, it will defeat us. But this woman, she looked and there was something within her. Jesus, I've got to see You. I've got to touch You. And the wonderful thing is there when she did that, she no doubt immediately, with all the joy that any person could ever have in a thing like this, but snuck back into the crowd. You can imagine her heart just beginning to beat with a thrill. I can't believe it. Look, I'm whole. It's so wonderful, the thrill that had to be there. But all of a sudden, as if things, you know, as wonderful as they could be, she heard all of a sudden the crowd stop, and there Jesus begins to speak. I mean, who touched me? Oh, no. Oh, no, it's going to come out now. I'm going to have to come and say, I touched You. And then the other people around are, you touched Him, you touched Him. Well, you touched me too. We're all unclean. Couldn't admit this. But there she comes and she falls at His feet. Trembling, it says, about her when she came. Fearing and trembling and knowing. I mean, here this agony of now coming and realizing, it was me, I can't lie about it. But there as she came, to come to find there, no doubt, as she looked into Jesus' face and Jesus looked into her, she saw something so unbelievable now. Because there as He smiled, and there as He looked upon her, and He said unto her, daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. He looks at her and he stops there as this woman just planning to slip away tenderly, but Jesus lovingly, no, I can't let her slip away. She'll go back and think she stole something from God. She'll go back and think she got something she wasn't worthy of or wasn't, couldn't have or that shouldn't have had. I've got to have her know she's why I came to town. I've got to know she is precisely the reason I'm here. The rest of the people can come and go as they choose to. But the reason I am here are for those that reach out and cry and say, please help me. For he stops everything and he says, virtue has gone out of me. Power. Somebody needed me. Somebody needed my resources. And all of a sudden there, Jesus stopped and he looks at her. If you can imagine this, as he says, the very first word, it says that he said unto her, daughter. 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 I have no family left. I have no one left. What did you call me? You looked at me there with a term of such affection, and all of a sudden Jesus wanted her to know, I just didn't touch you. I brought you into a family. I just, when you reached out to me, there was something here that is so fabulous. I want you to know about your mind, and I'm yours, and I love you. I care for you. Yes, I healed you, but far more than just healing you of your illness. I want to heal you of your loneliness. I want to heal you of your separation. I want you to heal you of your annihilation from everyone else around, and all of a sudden to have somebody that everybody had come to town to see and have him turn to this woman and there to embrace her and to say, daughter. All of a sudden everybody would look at her and say, daughter, but what did you call her? What are you carrying on with her? He wanted her and everyone that would look at her to know she was loved by God. She was healed by God. Her separation was over. Her annihilation from the rest of the world was over. Her loneliness was over. She was free. Oh, to me, when you and I stop and realize, no more doctor bill, no more, you know, no more having to worry about the money and how you're going to carry on. Now you've got somebody who says, I'm here. And the wonderful thing, I'll tell you, he wanted the entire town to know, no longer is she unclean. No longer is she rejected. She is so clean and she is so loved. She's mine. And what made her different than everyone else in the town? A feeble faith. Not the greatest, just a desperate one. That saw and connected with Jesus and realized, I need to touch you. And you know, this morning, once again, Jesus passes through our town. He comes, and as he passes through us, as we gather together, he is right here in the midst of us, the Bible says. And who is it that goes home any different? It's the one that says, Lord, help me. That reaches out and touches the hem of his garment and says, forgive me. Cleanse me. Make me clean. I'm desperate for you. Which are you today? And oh, when you and I would find ourselves as he passes by, realizing he comes and he's here, wanting at the end of the service, I believe, to say, who touched me? I hope it's you. I'd like Roby to come back up and at least we can sing that chorus if we can, but that he let us in. We have many Robies here today. It's a very common name. Very.
I'm insecure.
He's insecure, and so this helps him.